Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Taylor Velazquez. In 2018, a judge ruled in the Yazzie Martinez lawsuit that New Mexico was failing to provide an equitable education to students who are low-income, Native American, have disabilities, or are English language learners. This meant that the state was in direct violation of the Education Clause in the New Mexico State Constitution. The decision made by Judge Sarah Singleton pointed to the evidence of low test scores and graduation rates, the lack of culturally appropriate curriculum, and high rates of college remediation. She ruled that all New Mexico students have the right to be college or career ready. Specifically, the state failed to provide services and programs like dual language, social services like counselors, sufficiently small class sizes, extended learning hours after school or into the summer, and sufficient funding for both teacher recruitment and retention. Last year, the Public Education Department published its action plan for Yazzie Martinez. That includes strategies like a well-coordinated early childhood education system, extended learning programs to re-engage students, teaching educators the science of reading to ensure all students are reading at grade level, focusing on college or career readiness, and providing technology to all students and teachers with access to high internet. This morning, we'll hear from attorneys, educators, and state agencies, and we'll take a look at the efforts the state has made, why our education system is still facing significant challenges, and what still needs to be done to avoid more lawsuits. And we want to hear from you. What needs to change to provide all children an equitable education? How do we simultaneously re-engage students while fixing stressors that lead to teacher burnout? Email us at letstalk@kunm.org or give us a call at 505-277-5866 or tweet us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. And I want to go to our first guest this morning, Melissa Candelaria, from the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, and she's their education director and a member of the plaintiff's legal team for Yazzie Martinez. Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for being on the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You know, the court ruling came down in 2018, but I want to take a quick step back. Can you give us a little background? How did Yazzie Martinez versus the state of New Mexico come about?
Thank you, Ms. Velazquez, and thank you for that really good overview of the case. Our students are our future, and they deserve a gold standard education. They deserve to attend schools that welcome and value their cultures and languages and histories. They deserve small classes with passionate teachers who can relate to them or look like them, and they deserve caring counselors and behavioral and mental health support to help them thrive, as you pointed out. However, this is not what our children are getting, and the unfortunate reality is that decades of underfunding coupled with longstanding systemic racism in our society and institutions have left our education system with some of the worst educational inequities in the nation. And despite our students being culturally rich, the state has not provided a multicultural framework or the programs and services necessary for students to succeed. And not only do inequities and insufficiencies remain, New Mexico, as you point out, ranks the lowest in the country for many of the metrics used to measure student outcomes, such as proficiency and graduation rates. So the Yazzie Martinez case filed in 2014 was really a turning point, right? An opportunity to do right by our students. It's about ensuring that our students get a sufficient education that they are entitled to and the programs and services they need to do well in school and beyond. So the plaintiff families and school districts, as I mentioned, brought a lawsuit against the state of New Mexico and the Public Education Department. And in 2018, the court ruled in favor of the Yazzie and Martinez family and school district plaintiffs, holding that the state is violating the constitutional rights of Native and English language learners, students with disabilities, and children from economically disadvantaged households to a sufficient and uniform education that allows them to be entering college or careers. And the court ordered them to take immediate steps to increase funding and to provide programs and services to support the four student groups and to reform the funding and management systems of the public schools. So to sum up, as I mentioned, the case was brought in 2014 by family plaintiffs who felt like the education system was insufficient and that it needed to be improved and benefit the students so that they are set on a path for success. So that really is where the case started.
Do you think there's been enough transparency and accountability in the meeting, in meeting the requirements set out by the ruling?
Well, since the ruling, there's really been a lot of work happening on the ground in collaboration with educators, advocates, students, parents, community, tribal leaders, and policymakers. And while we do appreciate the work and the transparency of the state to begin to improve and rebuild the public education system, and we recognize that some investments in education have been made, unfortunately, there has not been a systemic level change yet, and the investments have not reached the classrooms. And so we continue to look for improvements and greater transparency in the system and opportunities and ways where our community, our parents, and everyone can be part of creating the solutions, right? We know, and we have experts, local experts in our universities and in our tribal communities and in all our communities across the state. We know what works. We have the solutions, and the lawsuit really provides a great opportunity for all of us to come together to collaborate for the benefit of all students, and especially the students in the lawsuit, the four student groups mentioned earlier.
We do have the Secretary of Education from the Public Education Department on the line, and we'll introduce him in just a minute. But Melissa, what are your thoughts on the action plan the department published last May?
We recognize that the Public Education Department and others have put a lot of work into the draft action plan. Unfortunately, in reviewing the action plan, we felt like it was missing some key elements or components that should be in a comprehensive plan, such as timelines, a discussion about how it will measure student outcomes and how it will fund education on a multi-year level, as well as looking at action steps, goals, and short and long-term goals, and really ways that the state is looking to meet the constitutional standards of a sufficient and uniform education. And that takes a lot of thought and a lot of, again, collaboration with folks from our communities and collaboration to develop those solutions. So what we understand is that, you know, the draft plan came out, people provided comments and suggestions to PED on ways to improve the draft plan. The Public Education Department was supposed to come back with a revised draft plan by September of 2022. And as far as we know, that draft plan, the updated version, has not been provided to date.
I now want to introduce the Secretary of Education, Arsenio Romero, for the New Mexico Public Education Department. This is actually his second week on the job. Before joining PED, he was the superintendent for Las Lunas Schools. Good morning, Secretary Romero.
Good morning, Taylor. It's an honor to be here this morning. I thank you for the conversation. I think this is just such an important topic, and I appreciate being here this morning.
Of course. And we just heard a little bit from Melissa about what the case is about, how it came about, and your action plan. But what do you think about her specific comments about the PED action plan? And can you explain how working with early childhood education and care department, extended learning programs, college and career readiness will help New Mexico kids?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing I want to say is that there are so many wonderful things that are taking place across our state, in our classrooms, in our schools, in our school districts. And these changes that are happening are going to have a positive effect on all of our students. What's interesting about this is that systemic change takes time. It takes time to truly implement and get it done right. And what I want to say is that being here for the last couple of weeks as the Secretary of Education, I am really proud of all the work that's been done in this building by the hardworking people that work for the Public Education Department. But also just coming out of the public education realm as a superintendent, I know that the investments have taken place over the last few years. And some of those investments, just really quickly, being able to pay our teachers more so that we can retain and recruit teachers and really work on filling those gaps in all our classrooms across the state. But we're also seeing some huge investments in how we're teaching reading. working with our early childhood partners and our higher ed partners to make sure that we're implementing the science of reading and that consistency across the state of New Mexico. And where we're at is we've been able to roll it out. We've been able to train teachers across the state. And now very soon we're gonna start to see the benefits and the improvements for student outcomes across the state of New Mexico for our students.
And Melissa did mention that the action plan did receive public comments. What were the comments made and how did that change the course of your approach? Did it change the your approach?
Well, it's always important to have input and have our stakeholders that come in and be able to help us because we can always get better. And one thing I've noticed for sure is that when this plan started to come to start to be put together, we also, our classrooms look different today than they did from 2019. So now we're starting to have to revise that plan again to make sure that we're meeting the needs of our students. And that includes what we're seeing right now is a problem across the state is chronic absenteeism. This is gonna have to be something that we take on as a state. And we work with school districts and superintendents so we can tackle this program, this problem together. And so until we can start to take, really tackle some of those foundational problems, that will allow us to be able to make improvements in the classroom and so on and so forth so that we see those outcomes for students in the classrooms and we see graduation rates go up and we see our students succeeding in life.
And what about when you were heading Las Lunas Schools? What kinds of advice or requests did you have for the public education department?
Well, definitely one of the things that I've always been a champion of, no matter where I've been. So I've been in Doñana County, Chavez County, Luna County, Valencia County. One of the factors that I've seen as a common success is spending more time with teachers. I don't think anybody can argue that more time with teachers is a benefit. And wherever I've been able to champion that. And so when I look back to some of the successes I've had, we've had dramatic increases in outcomes for students just by being thoughtful about the calendar, thoughtful about instructional time and how we use that, making sure that we have high quality instruction in the classrooms. We give the best professional development for our teachers so that they're prepared and ready and confident in what they're doing. And this isn't gonna be anything different. What I get to do now is have an effect instead of just at a classroom level or at a school level or at a district level. Now I'm really looking forward to being able to take this opportunity to have an effect on the entire state. And we know it works because we see successes in many areas across our state. And now what we want to do is have that consistency across our state to be able to make sure that every classroom has those opportunities.
What came out of the action plan specifically? I know we heard that there was supposed to be some kind of draft last year in September, but can we anticipate any updates or other plans coming out?
Absolutely. We are finishing up the legislative session now. And we want to be able to finish strong. There is some strong legislation that we're looking at that's going to support this action plan, like spending more time with teachers. That's House Bill 130 with the extended learning program. We're also very excited about the possibilities of passing House Bill 285, which is really looking at the importance and elevating the status of special education students in our state. And when that comes out, then we're going to be able to continue to revise our plan, really make sure that we're getting the input from our stakeholders because we want this to be very comprehensive and successful. And absolutely, this is something that's going to be a living document that can evolve over time. But go ahead, Taylor.
No, go finish your thoughts.
Well, and in that, we kind of know what those big rocks are when we come to where we want to, really continue our investments. And so within that, we want to make sure that we're hiring the staff across our state. And that includes here at PED. We want to make sure that we're fully staffed here so that we can meet the needs of our students across the state. And we're going to be working with districts and superintendents to make sure that they can fill the needs of classroom teachers. We want to make sure that we have the best principals that are trained and confident in what they're doing and they're here for a long time. And also with superintendents, we want superintendents to be able to come in this role and lead their school district so they can implement this systemic change that takes some time. It doesn't happen overnight. And some of these things we'll be able to see some quick wins and see the improvements right away. Those are our short-term goals. And we also need to make sure that we're looking at our long-term goals and make sure that all these leaders in these schools are going to be able to be around long enough to be able to see those things happen.
And we're actually going to take a quick break here. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Taylor Velazquez. We're talking about where the state is now implementing the Yazzie Martinez ruling. We'll be back in a moment.
The spring fundraiser is coming right up on March 18th, and we're offering a really nice early bird prize this year. Local photographer Jan Bartlestone has donated a framed print from his collection. The image, the Big Holy, is printed on fine art canvas, hand varnished for longevity, and measures 36 by 42 inches. Donate by March 18th to be automatically entered into the early bird prize drawing. We're only offering one prize this spring, so don't wait. Visit KUNM.org and donate today.
Support comes from New Mexico Magazine. The March issue features unique places to stay, a visit to the petroglyphs and archaeological sites in the Dineta, tales of black cowboys and Geronimo restaurant. Details at newmexicomagazine.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, Puerto Rican artists Villano Antillano and Ana Macho talk about their latest projects and dreaming of queer and trans empowerment through their music.
I feel like La Sustancia X and Realismo Mágico both are a testament to that true power within us and like how to access it.
That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Taylor Velazquez. We're taking your calls about the updates on the Yazzie Martinez lawsuit. Are you a teacher? What needs to change to help both educators and students make progress towards closing those educational gaps? Give us a call at 505-277-5866 and let us know. Or you can email us at letstalk@kunm.org. But I also want to give it back to Melissa from the Center of Law and Poverty. Melissa, what were you just thinking when we were hearing from our new Secretary of Education?
Yes, thank you, Taylor. And Secretary Romero mentioned a bunch of actions that the state has taken, but there still remains much more the state has to do to come into compliance with the court mandates and to transform the public education system. And we know that not much has changed for students at the heart of the lawsuit. He mentioned the need to fill the shortage of teachers. We have thousands of classrooms still that don't have bilingual or TESOL endorsed teachers. We need to recruit and retain effective teachers, including more native teachers and teachers to serve in rural areas in special education and science and bilingual education. We still need full day pre-K because it's not available to all four-year-old children. And most schools do not have enough funding for programs and services such as after school, summer school, and tutoring programs and transportation, as well as the need for additional resources for students with disabilities and bilingual and multicultural programming. And importantly, the funding still is not targeted to the students in the four student groups. And of course, as noted, that we still are looking for more social workers, counselors, and nurses throughout our public schools to be able to support students to do well in school. And also, there's still a remaining need for technology, high-speed internet, and digital devices, especially in the rural areas and in tribal areas. So I would just mention that, you know, more still has to be done. And again, we would hope that PED would reach out to the community stakeholders to come up with those solutions. Thank you.
Melissa, when we're breaking down the demographics of New Mexico students, about 11% are Native Americans, 15% are English language learners, another 15% are students who have disabilities, and 71% are low income. The lawsuit does address these four groups, but has there been any significant benefits? What still needs to be done to make sure these groups are getting that equitable education? Melissa, can you hear me? Well, we're going
to... Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Melissa.
So as the court pointed out in its decision and order and also in its findings of fact, which came out to over 600 pages, the court outlined and delineated some of the things that still need to happen in that And one would be that PED has not given the school districts a framework to use to provide a multicultural education. And it still needs to fully implement its own laws, such as the Indian Education Act, the Hispanic Education Act, as well as the Bilingual and Multi-Education Act that we have on the books. And it also held that the state's failure to implement these laws was a constitutional violation. The court also pointed out that there's still a need for, again, more funding for programs and services, more culturally and linguistically relevant curriculum and instructional materials that our students need. We still need high quality and diverse teachers, as I mentioned earlier, and that funding needs to be targeted and tracked in how that funding is both going to programs and services to the four student groups and whether those services and programs are making a difference in improving outcomes for our students. So more still needs to be done. I think that the court ruling and the findings are very profound in that the court laid out all of these major deficiencies of the education system that must be addressed both by the executive and the legislative branches working together. And the court also said that, you know, at this point, it's deferring to those branches to come up with remedies to comply with the court order, but that it will continue to maintain jurisdiction until those changes and improvements have been made.
Judge Singleton did point to a lack of funding in the ruling in our education system, but that was back in 2018. Since then, we've spent over $1 billion on education and increased budgets going forward. How is this money being spent, Melissa?
That's a really great question, and that's a question we posed to the public education department in the state, right? We want to see and have an accountability of where that funding is going, and again, whether it's making a difference for Native kids, ELL students, students with disabilities, and students who come from low-income households. I think we want to see, again, greater accountability, increased funding, and really targeted funding to those four student groups.
Secretary Romero, when we're talking about funding right now, are there new projects on the horizon that will require more investments, or what's that looking like right now?
Absolutely. So these investments have been taking place for a number of years, and we're continuing to invest in education. And you're right, the legislature has been, very generous, and because they want to see our students in New Mexico succeed. And I agree with Melissa, more work needs to be done, and we're going to continue to do that work. Where those investments have taken place, like I mentioned earlier, was in making sure that we're paying teachers and staff higher living wages, and making sure that they can continue in this profession for years to come. And we want to be able to retain them from the best places and best universities and from around the country to come to New Mexico to be able to fill up our classrooms, and then make sure that those environments are good, safe places to work. They're places where we want to be able to spend a career there. And that's the recruitment and retaining of our teachers. But some of the other investments that have taken place that I'm really excited about, because these are going to be things that we're going to start to see positive outcomes in the near future, is really implementing structured literacy programs across our state. This includes improving reading proficiency, rolling out the professional development to every classroom in our state, and you're seeing the implementation of that now. And very, very soon, we're going to be able to see the positive outcomes. And the reason I really feel positive about this is that I've been able to do this on a smaller scale in districts across New Mexico. And I know that we have that consistency, and we're really looking at the science of reading and having that consistent implementation. We see the positive outcomes for our students. I'm really also excited about the opportunities for high dosage tutoring across our state. We've opened up hundreds of spots for communities across our state. These are going to also be able to fill in the gaps that students have that are very unique to individual students. And that's going to be another area where we can see positive outcomes.
It sounds like there's a lot of moving parts to meet the requirements of the lawsuit. And many of the responsibilities do provide a sufficient education does fall on school districts and even early childhood education and care department. What are the plans for getting funding out to school, Secretary?
Absolutely. We want those funds to go to the schools, and we want them to roll out so that they can implement everything that we're talking about today. I know that another area that we're really working on is to be able to align between agencies, and this is going to be powerful for students across our state. Melissa mentioned earlier about pre-K, and this is New Mexico is leading the effort in how we're being able to implement pre-K programs across our state, whether you're in an urban area, whether you're in a suburban area, or whether you're in a very rural area. We're working hard and have made great strides to be able to work with both public education and private providers in providing those services across our state. And we're also aligning with higher education across the spectrum to be able to make sure that we're improving program and outcomes for students, to be able to recruit students into the teaching fields. And this again is going to reap the benefits here very soon. We're going to be able to see those outcomes for students very quickly.
What does oversight look like, and how is PED working with school districts in order to make sure they're implementing all the resources that you guys are fighting for and giving them the funding?
You know, that is a huge part in this. And this is what I was talking about earlier, is we want to, one, make sure that we have classroom teachers that are filling our classrooms. We want to make sure that principals are highly trained and ready to go and be in those positions for a good amount of time to be able to implement the systemic change. And the same thing with our superintendents. And so we are working with districts across New Mexico and charters to be able to provide them, one, the resources, two, the professional development, and then just the systemic support in making sure how we implement programs. So some of these things are quite, you know, they're very detailed. We have to be able to make sure we're working with our constituents, working with our pueblos, working with our communities, our counties and our cities and villages, and of course, working with our school boards and making sure that we're all in this together and we're moving together at the same time. All of these different areas really need to be supportive of one each other and aligned in the work that we're doing. And so that's PED's role right now, is how we are helping them to be able to very uniquely address these issues in their communities, because they're a little different, whether you're from Albuquerque, whether you're on the borderland, whether you're in rural ranch areas, or whether you're on pueblos. We want to make sure that we are uniquely addressing the specific needs of your community.
And Melissa, I want to throw this question back to you. With everything we just heard from Secretary Romero, there is a lot of things going on, but in your perspective, is it enough?
Thank you for the question. Yes, there is a lot of moving parts and work being done on the ground by our teachers in the classroom, by our communities, and our advocates throughout the state. And I think this really speaks to the need for a comprehensive plan to include goals, action steps, timelines, funding, staffing, and accountability measures, as I mentioned earlier. Otherwise, all of these initiatives and efforts that Mr. Secretary Romero mentioned, it's going to be piecemeal, that it's not going to be a cohesive, comprehensive plan. And we really need that in order to transform the education system. And that is why the Yazzie plaintiffs had asked the court to order the state to come up with this plan. And so we still look for that effort to be happening. And at this point, we're still looking and sifting through the information we received in the discovery phase that we just completed in the litigation process, and to see whether first there's a plan, and also what course of action that, you know, the Yazzie and Martinez plaintiffs will take in the months to come.
And I know you just mentioned a few steps that you and your team are taking, and I know you can't talk about the specifics of your legal strategies here, but what is the next course of action? Are the plaintiffs wanting to go back to court, or do they feel like there's hope in the changes that are happening?
Thank you again for that question. So we, as I mentioned, we just finished the discovery phase, and basically that's just a legal process where we obtain information and documents from the state to see sort of the status or where the state is in the compliance with the court order. And so where we are now is we're in the process of sifting through that information and trying to decide the next steps in the case. And so that will be decided here shortly. But again, just to say that the students deserve a quality education. They deserve everything and every opportunity that we can provide them so that they can realize and take advantage of the opportunities to pursue their dreams and to pursue the goals that they have set for themselves and in their lives. And so we will continue to monitor the state's compliance both with the 2018 court order and also with the technology order that was issued during the pandemic, when the court ordered after the Yazzie plaintiffs went back to court and asked the court to order the state to provide digital devices and internet access to students again, especially during COVID and still to this day, where internet access is important to a sufficient education. And so the Yazzie and Martinez plaintiffs, we work very well together. We will continue to monitor and hold the state accountable and hope that they will comply with the court order. Thank you.
And we do have a listener email from Cliff who says, did the inequity come to exist because of the lack of feedback on conditions in remote or tribal areas? What is being done by PED to intervene going forward before the conditions and inequities fester? Secretary Romero, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, we've been collecting data on this for a number of years, and I think that's another area that we're continuing to evolve, how we're collecting data. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, one of the biggest pieces that we see now coming out of our pandemic is the need for, some specific support on chronic absenteeism. This is new data that we're collecting so that we can make decisions, the right decisions moving forward. And so this is a big piece of the puzzle. We want to make sure that we are collecting viable data, that we're asking the right questions, and that we are using this data to help us make decisions moving forward. And so whether it's chronic absenteeism, whether we're looking at students' success in reading, whether we're looking at graduation rates, all these areas we can, you know, really kind of drop the topic in there. It really depends on us having accurate data, reliable data, and data that helps us answer the questions that we need answering. And only then can we then implement a strategy to be able to move forward and make good decisions about what's going to be best for kids. So that's going to be important. This is something that we have to update right now. And what families are going to see in the very near future coming out of the Public Education Department is a way to be able to easily access that data. So we're showing transparency. We can show a story of how your child is doing, how your child's classroom is doing, and how the school is doing. And that's going to be information that we need to be able to address whatever issues are happening across our classrooms and across our school districts. And so we want that to be easy, user-friendly, easy to access, something that you can get on your laptop or your phone. And so you're going to see those benefits coming out soon to help us make decisions moving forward.
I want to introduce my next guest, Mandy Torres, an educator and 2020's Teacher of the Year, and Loretta Trujillo, Executive Director of Transform Education New Mexico, a coalition of educators, advocates, students, and more. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks, Taylor.
And Mandy, I want to jump to you. We just heard Secretary Romero mention chronic absenteeism a couple times. Has this been a significant problem for you, especially after returning to school after remote learning? And why are students so disengaged?
Well, Taylor, I'm actually no longer in the classroom, but what I've been hearing from teachers is that, yes, it's a problem. Students aren't coming to school for whatever reason. They're not engaged. They're not motivated to be there. Maybe they've, you know, decided that they could get a job. Maybe they had to get a job during the pandemic and they thought that was a better option for them. And I'm just curious, why is absenteeism new data? It seems like we should have already been collecting that data and have been looking at it and monitoring it. Because you do hear from our teachers that, you know, they can't teach the kids if they're not there.
Definitely. And Loretta, I see you over here. You're taking a lot of notes. There's no doubt we need more resources to help move us out of our last place rankings. But how do we find a balance where teachers feel heard but not overworked?
What a great question. I think one of the things I can offer is that teachers are being pushed, stretched beyond their limits. And that was true before the pandemic. But recently, when I think about teacher colleagues that are in the classrooms, I'm hearing about social-emotional issues having to do with the pandemic. And a lot of times what my experience was is that students were coming from situations that had to do with other systems that are not have not been adequately funded over time, housing, justice issues, immigration issues. And to kind of address that absenteeism issue, one of the things I think that is tied to these issues and why kids are maybe disengaged, the real question is, why aren't they there? And I think it has to do with systemic failings in other areas. But also, I just want to offer this idea that when we think about the assets that our students bring to the classroom, we have cultural assets that need to be tapped. And I think one of the ways to do that is to link data that we're collecting more related to professional development around issues of culture, history, identities, and things along those lines. I think teachers are really hungry for ways to have conversations that are both courageous and respectful of different points of view. So I think a real issue around teacher capacity is the way that we tend to put so much on a single individual in the classroom.
And I'm going to pause the conversation right there. Are you an educator? Do you feel supported enough to implement new strategies for teaching our kids? Let us know at 505-277-5866. And we're talking about updates on the Yazzie Martinez lawsuit on Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Taylor Velazquez, and we'll be back in a minute.
Gloria Chin and Anthony McGill, both as busy as can be, Gloria running three festivals, Anthony McGill, principal clarinet in the New York Philharmonic, but they don't just find time, they make time to play as a duet. Gloria Chin and Anthony McGill on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
While getting your deductions ready for tax filing, it's a great time to think about how to get a big deduction next year by donating that old car or truck. If you've been meaning to, but just haven't gotten around to it, make that call today. Come next April 15th, you'll be glad you did. To find out about the tax benefits to donating your unwanted vehicle to KUNM, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're looking at what it would take to close learning gaps, especially for at-risk students. There's still time to call in this morning at 505-277-5866. And Mandy, I want to go back to you. You've taken a lot of different positions in the education profession. You did work with PED as a teacher liaison for some time. But now, how do you think the Yazzie Martinez lawsuit should be approached, considering your experience?
Well, looking at it from the educator perspective, and I want to go back to what Loretta was talking about, of supporting our teachers. So throughout the entire action plan, there is mention of being culturally and linguistically responsive. Yet so many of our teachers have no idea what that actually looks like in the classroom because they haven't been supported in that effort. You know, there are calls for training and best practices for teaching English language learners and training teachers in behavior supports and training teachers in how to meet the unique needs of Native American students. And the list goes on. And they're all important and vital to student success. But our teachers are kind of holding up the white flag because training, if and when they actually get it, it's not sufficient. You know, we need quality classroom coaching and sustained support in the implementation of best practices. We simply aren't putting enough time, effort, and depth into supporting classroom practice. Melissa mentioned that students aren't yet reaping benefits, and this is in part because of the reason why. She also mentioned that we need to track funding. We should also be tracking professional development, as well as ensure that our teacher preparation programs are giving teachers what they need. Teachers are the number one in-school factor that determines student success. So we have to put more time and effort here. You know, I've asked teachers, you know, have you heard of the SEL framework that PED put out? It's great work. I have one teacher responded to me like, well, I saw that it was in the shape of a tree. She's like, but I don't. It's never been explained to me. I don't really know what it is. And I think the same thing is, you know, the same thing with CLR and teaching our English learners. English learners. And, you know, we have to do what we're doing with structured literacy that Secretary Romero mentioned. You know, thanks to the leadership of Senator Mimi Stewart, all elementary teachers are getting training in the science of reading, and it is in depth. And Senator Stewart is committed to ensuring that teachers have access to coaches along the way as they implement the lessons in their classroom. We have six schools that are diving deep to be model schools in structured literacy and share best practices. We have to do that for all of those things, for SEL, for culturally linguistically responsive teaching, social emotional learning. That's how we're going to raise the quality of our teachers and the quality of instruction that's happening in our classrooms.
Loretta, I think we can all agree that there are some significant educational gaps going on right now, and we're all trying to figure out how we close those gaps. And I wonder if there's some kind of statistical or logical approach that might encourage us to concentrate on the most challenged learners or those who in the middle to bring up their averages, but could potentially leave out other students. How do we ensure equity for everyone?
I think one of the best places to start with that question is individuals, right? Any journey that we're on to understand our identities in relationship to ourselves and to the community that we're around has to do with who we are, who raised us, what are the traditions, the cultural experiences and ancestral histories that we carry in our DNA. And I feel like when we talk about achievement and we talk about gaps, one of the most sound ways to address that is through culturally responsive instruction. And the main reason I say that is that when students feel seen and cared for, they will improve. And while I think structured literacy has its benefits, I do think that you can't teach reading without addressing, phonemic awareness, for example. What culturally responsive teaching offers is the space for students to see themselves represented in their books, in their, in their units of study. And when we think about college access, a lot of times young people are not necessarily saying no to college. They're saying no to not knowing how to go about it. And so until we can push the pipeline further and get more of our students of color into higher education or into careers or into career exploration opportunities through CTE opportunities, I think we're going to really stay stuck. And so one of the things that our organization is really able to offer PED is a wealth of resources around how to operate in a responsible way with community, tapping into community and cultural richness. And I think equity is something that's often misunderstood. The difference between equality and equity is something that I think would also benefit teachers and a lot of other individuals to kind of really suss out the nuances. And so I think professional development is incredibly, incredibly important around culturally responsive teaching practices.
And we actually have a tweet from our listener, Elizabeth. She says, and legislators want to lengthen the school year to be able to check a box and say, we tried. Guess what, New Mexico peeps? Not going to work. Just going to make a lot of more people mad. And Mandy, I did recently a lot of reporting on extended time bills going through the legislature, and that was addressed in the action plan with PED as well. They could increase time for instructional time for kids and prep time for our teachers. One bill did pass. However, I heard from a lot of teachers that this would negatively impact them and their students. Some said that it would even make them consider being a teacher in the state. How can extending the time students are in school help education outcomes? How would staffing have to change to implement something like this?
We did hear a lot from the teachers that, this was going to be, there's already a lot on their plate, and they're saying, you just keep putting more on our plate and you're not taking anything off. But I think we have to be, make sure that we're staying student-centered in this. And I know as an educator, I was tired. I would always stay late. I was working on the weekends doing lesson plans. But I always kept my students at the forefront. And I think that's really just how we have to look at this. Because our students need more support. When I was a teacher, I never felt like I had enough time. We didn't have in-school tutoring. We didn't have reading interventionists or math interventionists, and that support wasn't there. So we need to have time to be able to implement those sorts of things. And I think the most important thing is, what teachers just say, we don't want more of the same. We can't just do change for change's sake. We really have to push our district leaders to be innovative about what they're doing for that extra time. A lot of our kids, don't get enrichment outside of school. So how can we bring that enrichment into school? How can we do, bring the arts and STEM and even things like cooking to our kids that will allow them to apply the skills that they're learning, but it's also going to motivate them to be there. And at the same time, when we're doing this enrichment, then we can give teachers back that time for that planning and collaboration that they're so desperately craving, that they so desperately need. And it's paid time, right? Now they can get that done on the clock in the classroom at school rather than having to take all of that work and grading and all of the emails and things at home. So,
and I want to take a call from Bernadette. Good morning, Bernadette.
Good morning.
And what was your comment this morning?
Yes, I'm a retired speech-language pathologist in Santa Fe, and I was in the system for 35-plus years, and what I see as the main priority to improve student performance of these students is that the student ratio to teachers be more reasonable, that there needs to be smaller class sizes in all levels of education, from pre-K to high school, because a teacher has a day with their students, but that's not, if they have 30 kids in their class, that's not very much time to try and reach these major objectives. With the students, I think teachers spend a lot of time doing paperwork so that they can be accountable to PED for what they are required to do, but it's not happening the other way around. I really hope that this timetable and that Melissa's talking about gets put on paper, because I think the teachers would feel much better. I think the students will be able to tell their students what is happening and how their voices are being heard. And I think PED needs to be talking to the teachers directly, be in the classrooms with them and see what they have to do, because they are managing complicated systems. You know, if you have one teacher that has students in their classroom that need that are ELL plus have special education needs, they have that system coming into their classroom, and they're trying to coordinate those services. And when those services aren't there one day for whatever reason, the load gets put on them.
Right, Brenda, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your thoughts. But I do need to move on to our next guest, Laurel Nisbet, the senior attorney with Disability Rights of New Mexico. Good morning, Laurel. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Students with disabilities were identified in the lawsuit. There are well over 50,000 students statewide that require special education. Have we seen significant changes with providing resources to these students since the Yazzie Martinez ruling?
You know, we really have not, I think, on the ground seen so many changes. I do appreciate what the Secretary has to say about certain changes like structured literacy and the very concrete changes there, to the extent that they are hopefully over time with the patients that we're urged to have about this, that those changes are going to really get out there and be solidified in the schools in ways that will benefit students with reading disability. And there are some other positives that we can see, but I think I would echo the comments of other folks that these are individual efforts and not a sustained and visionary plan. What we don't see, even with the number of years that, you know, following Yazzie Martinez and even following the many decades that the federal law, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, has been in place, we just don't see that students with disabilities are being sufficiently served. I mean, again, echoing the comments of others in terms of capacity, the capacity of the department to deliver to enforce the delivery of these services in the schools is a real problem. When we sit in, I know your listeners will be familiar with individual education programs, individualized education programs, or IEPs for students with disabilities. Very often, teams who are supposed to be making individualized decisions based on the needs of the students, are really making those decisions based on the capacity of the district, the resources of the district. So in other words, instead of saying what the child needs, we're saying what the district has. And very often the district doesn't have what the district needs. I think that just, if I could very briefly just speak to this question of chronic absenteeism as well, which I'm glad that that issue came up, because albeit it's a good thing that there's data being collected on it now, the problem of children not being in school, and particularly children with disabilities not being in school, is a longstanding problem. It's actually one of the big problems that caused the IDEA to go in place in the first place, is the utter exclusion of students from school. Still, all the time on the ground, we see exclusion of students from school based on disability related behavior. And one thing I guess I would urge the department to look at in collecting this data, to the extent that they're doing it, I really applaud that they are, but really this data needs to look at how well the behavioral needs of students with disabilities are being met, how well in the general education setting social emotional needs of students are being met. Because these are very, very big deals. I think there is a cultural shift that needs to happen with respect to students with disabilities, where the real purpose of IDEA and ensuring that students really do have a right to be there in the classroom, learning with their non-disabled peers, that really needs to be realized. It is true that students come to school with everything they have that's related to their disability, including their behaviors. And right now we see just a real lack of capacity to address that.
And I do want to take a call from Nancy in Rio Rancho. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
And what was your comment this morning?
I am the executive director of the New Mexico Alliance for School-Based Healthcare, and I wanted to thank my colleagues at the Center on Law and Poverty, Transform Education New Mexico, and PED, as well as legislators who voted to expand investments in the school-based healthcare model, because as your guests have mentioned, I just feel like we ask too much of our teachers. And in addition to teaching curriculum, they're expected to address every single social determinant of health, social determinant of education, and we really feel like collaboration with community partners like the medical entities that run school-based health centers, as well as community schools partners, can help families meet children's needs, whether it's primary health care, mental health care, so that students aren't chronically absent and that they have what they need to be healthy and ready to learn. So we just want to encourage community partners to reach out and support teachers and schools, and the school-based health center field is ready to expand and hopefully can help in this effort.
Great, Nancy. Thank you for calling in. And Laurel, I want to get your final thoughts. We just heard from Nancy. We're also talking about the strengths and weaknesses when it comes to Yazzie Martinez for students with disabilities and how we define their success, because I know that's very hard to define for everyone. So what are your final thoughts as we end this hour?
Well, just briefly, I think kind of going off that the last comment that I was making about not being at school, I think one of the problems with outcomes for students with disabilities is, and really dire outcomes sometimes, is what we commonly talk about as the school to jail or school to prison pipeline, where because there is so much exclusion through exclusionary discipline, suspensions, expulsions, use of punitive measures like restraint, seclusion, involvement of law enforcement. We know these things are happening at a very disproportionate rate for students of color and students with disabilities, and people are really excluded. But also, I think graduation issues and transition issues are really a problem in terms of really, really having in place the kinds of transition services that students are promised under the IDEA.
And that's all the time we have today. Thanks for everyone who emailed and called to share your thoughts. And thank you so much to our guests, Secretary Arsenio Romero, Mandy Torres, Laurel Nisbet, Loretta Trujillo, and Melissa Candelaria. This show was made possible by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and KUNM listeners like you. Let's keep the conversation going. Share your ideas on Twitter using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. On Facebook, search KUNM Radio, or email letstalk@KUNM. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Megan Kamrick took your calls. Jeanette DiDio's live tweeted, and Coffee Movahead was our executive producer. I'm Taylor Velasquez. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.